as we lean into the world, as we reach towards others, we're going to also see what is true. We're going to see ourselves more truthfully. And that drives growth. That helps us choose more wisely. That helps us learn how to love. And so the truth is hard because it asks more of us than we currently have capacity to give. And a measure of our faith is the willingness to accept what is true, to realign our choices in accordance with it. And that drives us forward. That helps us grow into a stronger person and a person more capable of knowing another, but also a person more at peace with themselves and more capable of being known.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome back to All Things for Good. I'm very excited for today's episode. We have Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife on with us, who needs no introduction.
We're super, super grateful to have you here, Dr.
Thank you.
Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Well, thanks for having me.
And you are coming to the LDS Kappa Fall Conference this year.
Yes, that's right.
Do you know which day you're presenting and what you're talking
about? I believe it's Thursday afternoon. Yeah.
And I assume you're talking about integrating healthy sexuality.
So a book is being published called That We Might Have Joy. And so I'm focusing a lot on the themes of that book. But the book is written for Latter-day Saints about how we have approached our theology often in ways that have been more fear-based and sort of borrowed traditions from the larger culture that have interfered with receiving the gift of the body and understanding the principle that we are, that we might have joy, and that our bodies and the wisdom that comes through the body are really there for us, that it's that the body is an instrument of perception, that it's a spiritual instrument, and that it's highly linked to joyfulness. And in a marriage, joyfulness in marriage. And so I at the beginning of the book, I kind of lay out what have been some of the challenges and the false traditions that we've internalized that have interfered with happiness in our marriages, and how we can apply our theology to grow in our capacity for love and intimacy, and grow in joyfulness in our lives and in our marriages if we're married. And so I'm going to be talking about how to help clients that are Christian or Latter-day Saint that have learned the idea, and this is not just an LDS false tradition, but one that's sort of a typical Christian interpretation, that the body and pleasure is antithetical to spirituality or goodness. And so I'll be talking about why we've internalized that idea, why that's a typical idea, why we're often afraid of sexuality. And there's some good reasons for that, because it is a powerful way of being in connection with another person and ourselves. And so, and many well-intentioned parents and teachers, given that we have a high standard around sexuality, use fear to try to get to the goal of getting to the altar as a virgin. But then what we often do is actually interfere with our ability to integrate our sexuality, to be at peace with it, and to be able to love and be loved through it. And so even if we achieve the first goal, we've interfered with the second one, which is creating intimate, joyful marriages, which is also a part of our goal in our as Latter-day Saints, is to create solid, happy marriages. So I'll be laying out in my presentation how we've internalized it, why we've internalized it, and then what therapists are doing in working with a couple or an individual to help them be more able to accept the body, to become more able to accept sexuality, but also how to trust themselves with it, how to be able to love another person through it, to receive love through our sexuality and our bodies, and how to develop an honest peace, which has to do with accepting our embodied and sexual nature. But it also has to do with aligning our choices with our integrity, with our morality. That's also a part of integrating sexuality, that we can't be a house divided, that we have to relate to this powerful form, a powerful language of sexuality in a way that accrues to our well-being, that accrues to the strength of our relationships. And so self-control, perhaps paradoxically, is always a part of intimate freedom, of joy in a marriage. We have to be able to discern and make choices in wise ways, but in the context of loving, committed partnership, we can experience joy and ease and freedom and openness in a way that, you know, fills us up and grounds us and allows us to feel as a resource in our marriages. You know, that sex can actually be the sacrament of a marriage.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I had a thing I was already going to say, but that last line of sex can be the sacrament in a marriage, and just all of the connotations that come with the word sacrament and sacrifice and sacred, and how approaching this act within the context of a marriage really does shift, I think, the relationship from this earthly dynamic and give it the opportunity to become a sacred dynamic and a more holy celestial dynamic.
That's right. Great. And, you know, sometimes people are like, wow, how would sexuality and spirituality have anything to do with each other? Because we tend to think of spirituality as like obedience and the rules and not making any mistakes. And we think of sexuality as being a little more indulgent and without restraint and so on. And to your point, Ashley, the way it can feel like a sacrament is often about something that in the kind of earthliness of our experience, we have access to the divine, that we can step into this in-between space between earthly experience and heavenly experience. And loving sexuality has the ability to do that. And it's not through mind-blowing experiences. It's that being in honest connection, honest communion, to feel this sense of gratitude and honesty and openness, that in loving through the body, through the sexuality of it, we actually can step into this liminal space, right? We can experience the sublime. And it's simple and yet sanctifying. It helps us touch something that our souls need, and that we can access that imperfectly always, but we can access that through loving, intimate connection in marriage.
That seems so, such a stark contrast to what, at least in my perception, is often sold as the epitome of sexuality that you find in the world, where there is a constant push for novelty, for intensity, for keeping the fire. You know, there's all of, I'm sure there's hundreds of books, keeping the fire going, spicing things up. Like that's the course. And what oftentimes we think of as the church paradigm as like, is more
subdued
is exactly the word I was thinking. And this is neither of those.
That's right.
Paradigms.
That's right. That's right. So one thing I talk about in my book a lot is Eros and how it's related to our spirituality. And Eros is the human longing for communion with divinity, with one another, with mystery, with the world God gave us. And so the human soul is defined perhaps best by longing for something outside of our insular selves. And in our reaching for better, reaching toward another, reaching to understand, that's how the soul grows. And so it's life-giving. In Greek mythology, Eros is the life force. It is the antidote to depression. It's faith. It's stepping outside of the world we know to create and experience a better world. And so sex, Eros is the root of erotic. But plenty of sex isn't erotic at all in the true sense of the word. Now, a lot of people have used erotic to mean the kind of commercialized, salacious forms of sex. But when I mean like truly Eros love, it is about a kind of communion with another person. It's this life-giving connection with something beyond ourselves. And that's what spirituality is also. Now, we can use sex to get away from our lives. We can use it as an act of despair, use of another person, pleasure to get away from our unhappiness, right? But we're using it to betray something internally. It's a kind of division. Where when it's truly eros and erotic, it's a form of communion and deeper connection, both with ourselves, with our souls, and another soul. And so it's based in something honest and expansive and grounding at the same time. And that's what honest connection with the divine is too. I can be true to myself and I can feel a connection with divinity. And so it both allows us to be truer to ourselves at the same time that it's allowing us to expand beyond our own limitations or outside of our own insular reality. And so sex isn't inherently good, but it can be very good when we learn how to relate to it in a way that makes us stronger.
One of my favorite things to watch for are Satan's counterfeit versions of something that God has brought in. And I always use counterfeit and distortions to mean two totally different things. A counterfeit to me is something that looks the same, sounds the same, almost use the exact same words, and only an expert in that day God is going to be able to walk in and look at that painting and say, no, that's a counterfeit, right? So as you're talking, what I'm hearing, especially with the word erotic, is this Satan's counterfeit version of filling that longing with the erotic, sensual, no boundaries, pleasure. What's truly meant to be there, this eros love, where we are communing and meeting, and it fills this deeper connection of our soul.
We're stronger for it. The marriage is stronger for it. And, you know, a lot of times in our misunderstanding, we make pleasure the problem or the body the problem. And too many of us have taught our youth that, or we've been taught that. And pleasure is a part of joy, right? You know, pleasure is a part of, it's a balm in our lives. But pleasure, just like sexuality, isn't just one thing. Are we using pleasure to indulge, to betray another person or ourselves, to get away from our life? Or is it a pleasure that's based in what is beautiful, what is good, what is virtuous? Are we stronger for the ability to take in those sensual pleasures? And so we have to do a better job, I think, of understanding, what does this pleasure accrue to? What is it creating? But it's not about getting away from pleasure. Some of us think spirituality is equivalent to long suffering. And of course, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is about sacrificing something you want for something you want more. Or sometimes it is about enduring something difficult because you trust that it is the right thing. But it isn't the absence of pleasure or the absence of joy. I mean, right in the Book of Mormon, we learn that we might have joy. And joy hinges on the ability to enjoy one another, enjoy life, to have pleasure in it, but not a pleasure that betrays our morality.
It's beautiful. What it reminds me of is the law of chastity, which is given to us. And the more, and I think, well, Ashley and I are both single in the space of single momhood. Mm-hmm. And it has really opened my eyes at what an incredible gift of pure love that law is from a God of light and a God who wants love and safety and goodness for his children. And we see it as so, we're raised with that as a guideline. Obviously, it's a really critical, one of the major critical guidelines that we're given as members or Latter-day Saints. But we orient to it in a way that restricts our ability to see it as a gift.
Yeah, that's right.
And rather we see it as something that we measure ourselves by, our goodness by, or we whip ourselves with, or our failings with. And I think that false orientation is similar to what you're describing here. And we misunderstand the gifts that are given. And instead of rejoicing in them, and also being humbly receiving them and learning from them, we abuse ourselves with them.
Yeah, we do. Right. So easily. And fear, you know, the opposite of love is fear. And we tend to, you know, we tend to too often link our morality and fear and shame and restriction, and that God is like there ready to punish us for getting it wrong, as opposed to we have guidelines and structures to help us along our way to stay true to ourselves, to hold what is precious, right? Because it's so fundamental to joy. I wrote my dissertation on LDS women and sexual agency, and I interviewed active Latter-day Saint women who were married currently about their premarital experiences and their marital experiences and what the transition into marriage was like for them. And what was really interesting, I'm trying to keep it as simple as I can because there's a lot of different findings, but that, so just like there was a small group of women who transitioned very happily. They were enjoying intimacy as a part of their marriages. Like they enjoyed sex. They felt good about it. It was an important part of their lives. The majority of the women I interviewed were not having that experience. They were much more conflicted about sexuality, much more uncertain that it was something for themselves. But what was interesting in the research was that the women who were thriving, right, they actually had been the most careful in their sexual decision making, but they didn't do it out of shame. They did it out of desire. So that is one of the questions I asked was, what was your first experience? When did you first know your body was capable of pleasure, sexual pleasure? And then how did you respond to that awareness? Well, the women who did well, they actually responded with a positive response. Like they saw it as a cool thing that their body was capable of these feelings. They were like, wow, that's, I like that. I'm glad about that. The women who didn't do well, they immediately had a sense of shame or fear or ambivalence about their body's capacity. Women who had self-confidence and trusted their desires more, they did the best. So they saw this as like, okay, they could accept themselves. They could accept their sexuality. But then the women I interviewed happened to all clearly value the law of chastity. That is to say, they wanted a context of commitment in which to bring their sexuality. And so they valued the idea of waiting, but it wasn't just like to keep a future man happy with them or to keep God happy with them. I mean, they cared about their relationship with God, but it wasn't about trying to please. It was about being true to their own desires. And so they were the most careful in their sexual choices, but they didn't have any issue with sexuality or pleasure. That is, like, in the right context, they were all for developing this part of themselves because it was what they wanted. The women who struggled a lot more had a lot more fear, self-rejection, anxiety. And of course, they all came by these feelings, honestly. So I'm certainly not judging that group by any stretch, but that then they were more likely to get coerced in their premarital experiences. They were often not thinking about what they desired in a romantic interaction, but much more about what the man desired from them. Right, much more self-betraying, and then even in marriage, much more focused on what their husband wanted than what they desired or what they wanted to create. And so if we can help our children to think about sexuality and even the law of chastity as more of a way of protecting something very good, that something that is actually creating a context in which you can truly explore and experience and integrate something, the better we do. Not so much the fear, like this is right next to murder idea, but more about this is a process of learning how to regulate your feelings, making wise choices with them. It's going to be imperfect, but it's a valuable thing to learn because then you'll be integrated. Like I always talk about this word integration. Integration, again, is being able to accept our sensual and sexual nature and make choices that accrue to our well-being and the strength of our relationships. So learning self-control matters, but not because sex is such a terrible thing, but because it's actually has the potential to be a very positive thing in our lives if we're deliberate with it.
I'm thinking about clients and friends and how many times I've heard phrases like, I went from sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad to overnight getting married and suddenly I'm supposed to be okay with it.
Overwhelming.
Or my own experience as a out of high school, 20 something, brand new to college, I couldn't even say the word body. I'd be caught dead in a class that had to study body. That word was like, that was
scary.
And how different my experience, their experiences would be if the training had come instead of, we both chuckled at your "it's next to murder" thing, because I think we both know what you're referencing. We've all heard that. Yeah. Instead of that step, but into a more, look how incredible and holy your body is.
Yes.
And let, I hear in your teaching so much about learning who I am and what are my values, and then really integrating being connected with my
yes. Spirit.
And yes. It from that way instead. What a cool, yes. empowering way to learn the law of chastity.
Yeah. Well, and we do so many hard things as human beings. Like that is to say, human beings are capable of doing really difficult, important things, but we have more capacity to do them the more that we are clear within ourselves that they matter for us personally. Not, oh, I should do it because I've been told I should do it. Or if I don't do it, people will reject me. Or if I, that's a much weaker position. And it's certainly a place where most of us start in our moral development. And there is a certain amount of just borrowing the rules, right, in the early part of our development. But at a certain point, we have to come up with our own position. Who am I in this? Who do I desire to be? What do I desire to create in my life? Because that's really the power source of doing things that can be challenging, but we're doing them because we believe in them, because they speak to who we desire to be and what feels true to us. And that's really important to help for ourselves and to help our children to find that self-authoring place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pure agency. This is who, yes. I choose.
That's right.
I'm exercising we have a colleague that calls it agent power mode once we step into that.
Yeah. No, it's true. You know, we talk all the time about agency, but we're not that great at it. We're not that great at teaching it. Sometimes we get much more focused on obedience and, you know,
but we like to default to coercion.
Yes, we do.
Well, teach agency, we're going to default to, to coercion. Yes,
exactly.
From the scripture understanding of Ashley, I think that agency is one of God's most important gifts, so much that's the whole point of this earth. I think we come here, and the reason for the veil is so that we can really just learn who we are and our preferred method of living, so that we can then see the kingdoms that are set up and say, I know myself well enough to know that I would prefer to live in this kingdom, that this is the way that resonates with me the most. Whereas if we never had this period of separation, who's going to sit there with this all-knowing, all-loving Father and feel that sort of intense, real love and say, I think I'm going to be more comfortable living somewhere else? I don't think any of us could have that conversation if we didn't first have a period of knowing
sorting out
we are and how we really want to live. And how cool is it that our God loves us enough to say, you don't have to choose to live my way. I still love you enough that here's a variety of kingdoms. Please choose to live in the way that resonates with you the most. Mm-hmm. I think Judgment Day is going to be more about learning, taking what I've learned about Earth and what I learn about myself. I'm judging that I will most likely experience comfort in this realm. Mm-hmm. God says, great, I love you. Go live.
Yeah.
There. See you.
Yeah. Well, and I like the founding story of Adam and Eve. This is something I talk about in my book a lot, like kind of what drives our development. And it's really choosing. It's really behavior. It's asserting choices within complexity. And that's what allows us to grow in our capacity as moral beings. And so even the story of Adam and Eve is ultimately, there was no singular right choice. It was like there was a dilemma. I can obey this way, but then not do this, or obey that way and not do this. And where do I stand? What do I choose? We kind of want it like if we just figure out God's mind, we can just get everything right and make no mistakes. And that's the goal, like be perfect. I don't think that's the right understanding of development and what we're here for. I think there's something to this whole exercise of choosing and learning as we go and asserting a self into the world. And of course, we can borrow wisdom. We can borrow teachings that help us. But so much of it is a trial and error process of using our agency to forge a self in the world. And that's really the backbone of our spiritual growth.
My next question for you is, what's your favorite scripture or doctrine that informs your work? And it might be this agency, but there might be something else. So what do you think?
Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, right? So that's probably always been my favorite, actually. I think that the truth is hard. I mean, I think we like to think that, oh, yeah, I'm all about the truth, and I'm all about standing for the truth. But most of us don't like the truth because the truth hurts. What a spouse has to say, what a child has to tell us, what a sibling has to say about who we are. Those are truthful revelation. I mean, not that any of those people necessarily reveal the pure truth about us, but often in relationship or in our relationship with the divine, you know, there's a kind of self-awareness that comes through that can hurt, that is challenging, challenges our view of ourselves, our view of the world. And it can be really easy to want to cling to the world as we know it, to our view of ourselves that we prefer, out of our fear, rather than letting our, you know, again, in the Eros sense, as we lean into the world, as we reach towards others, we're going to also see what is true. We're going to see ourselves more truthfully. And that drives growth. That helps us choose more wisely. That helps us learn how to love. And so the truth is hard because it asks more of us than we currently have capacity to give. And a measure of our faith is the willingness to accept what is true, to realign our choices in accordance with it. And that drives us forward. That helps us grow into a stronger person and a person more capable of knowing another, but also a person more at peace with themselves and more capable of being known.
You outline a really hard path there. There, I hear this, the need to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And opening up to that as, and that, and relationship being the vehicle for pressuring development.
And, yeah.
Yes. And not being afraid of that. And yes. I think oftentimes we're raised in a way of like, we're trying to prove our goodness because we're terrified of being judged as lacking or as not enough, or that just that misunderstanding of love. And that blocks us from seeing truth because we have to defend our goodness, which is, quite frankly, if we're breathing, not good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right. Only God is good, right? That is that we want so much, and that's the ego. That's natural man, as I think about it. Natural man is not sex. Natural man is ego and self-protection and not wanting the exposures of real connection, of honest connection, because they break us open in a very important way, but it hurts. It's, you know, the truth shall set you free. But I always say, like, they edited out the part, like, at first it makes you miserable, then it sets you free.
The picture I just had in my mind was a seed that it's being planted and it has to crack open where it's going to be set free and grow and bloom. But that cracking open piece, it's painful, it's unexpected and uncertain.
And it feels like something's going terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And yet it's a measure, it's a test of our faith in the sense of, do I believe in what is good? Do I believe in what is, do I believe in love? Do I believe in honesty and truth and yielding to it, like letting it shape my soul? Because it's really easy to say, I believe all these things and name them in a logical way, but it's quite another thing to actually live in accordance with it. Like, it's much easier for me to teach these things. It's much harder to do them. Like, doing them kind of sucks sometimes, you know? And so, you know, the idea is we can love the ideas, but actually living in a way that breaks us open and keeps us growing and learning, that's much harder.
Yeah. My last question for you is, as clinicians and coaches in the mental health and relationship health world are engaging with clients who have been raised with some of those cultural imperfections, how do we meet them? How do we help them? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, It's a good question. I'm kind of always in these kinds of conversations, but you know, I'm often helping people see that we're receiving truths, but they're limited by the teacher. That is to say, we can only teach as much truth as we ourselves have internalized. And so we've often been raised by often well-meaning parents and teachers who are teaching a limited idea, or they're teaching the way that they are currently living it. And so that's not to dismiss the negative impact that it may have had on a client, or that it's very hard for them to grow beyond that idea. But being able to understand how they received that idea can actually help them start to consider that maybe this, there is a better way. There is a stronger way. This way I have been trying and it's not been working for me. And maybe my parents didn't have it all worked out. Maybe I can reach for a higher way of thinking. And this is, again, this is easy to say. It's another thing to do it. But again, it's an act of faith to reach for a world we don't yet know, to believe in a compassionate God, even if that wasn't how our parents were, right? That's faith. Like to actually care about others at a level that maybe we didn't receive. That's faith. That's like, I'm actually going to reach up towards something better, even though I desire it, I feel the goodness in it, but I'm afraid because I don't know how to live in that way. The willingness to subject ourselves to it, that's the real measure of our moral courage. And it's also the way we open up our lives. So I'm always trying to help people see better what they're doing, how they came to do what they're doing, and what it's costing them, and what might be a better way. And I even do this in the book. I kind of start the book by laying out kind of a vision of what we're capable of as Latter-day Saints. But then what are the false traditions and what have they cost us? And somebody interviewed me yesterday and she was saying, because she read the whole book, she got a preview copy of it. And she said, it was very, very helpful and normalizing to say, like, it actually makes sense that I've been stuck in the way I've been stuck because well-meaning people taught me in a way that produced this very outcome. But then to have, like, how could I do this differently? How could I think about these things in a better way? And so once you see where you got there, then it increases your agency to actually choose in a stronger way.
Now, that may have been Ashley's last question, but I have at least 27.
Yeah.
Really, I just don't want you to stop talking. This has been, this has just been really filling. Can you remind us the name of your book and when is it being released?
So it's That We Might Have Joy, Desire, Divinity, and Intimate Love is the subtitle. And you can purchase it right now on pre-order through Amazon. And it will be released September 30th. So, okay. Oh, yeah.
Perfect, right?
Yeah.
In time for the conference.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Just right before. And I will be presenting the week end before that at Restore, a Faith Matters gathering. So it will also be there for anybody that's at Restore. They can get it early. But yeah, that's the week. So, yeah.
Nice. For clinicians who are interested in trainings or consultations or presentations from you, how can they get in contact with you?
So just go to my website. So finlaysonfife.com is where my website is, and you can find all the offerings there.
We'll link all of that in the show notes, so anyone who's interested can find that nice and easy. And
great.
Thank you again for your time today. I've really enjoyed just soaking in all of your knowledge.
Well, thank
what
you.
What I notice is there is, and you talked about it in when you gave me your bio, is just this level of peace that settles when we talk about, and it, just observing this, there, it was fascinating to me to say we could talk about sex and agency and spirituality and kind of and easily unencumbered flow in between these that in the past, and maybe in my kind of immature brain, are kind of, there's very strong walls.
Yeah.
There's divisions between these, and this openness to discuss these topics naturally and how they interrelate to each other.
Yeah.
It has settled. I've just noticed it feels very peaceful.
Great.
So I appreciate that experiential podcast experience for me.
Well, and I think when something resonates with our souls, it's like the evidence of there's a truth in there that is important for me. So I think so many good people want a peaceful relationship with their spouse, with their sexuality, but they've internalized false traditions, and so they can't get there even though they feel the longing for it. And so I hope that my book will help people to really be invited into another way of thinking about it, and they can decide for themselves what feels true there. But my wish is for Latter-day Saints to live into the best in our theology and to find a deeper peace in our bodies and in our lived experience, and deeper trust in a loving God.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.